Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
To the outside world, Mary Hulgrain was doing well. She won an All-Ireland medal and an All-Star award in 2016 as the goalkeeper for the Kildare Ladies senior football team. Go on, the Lady Whites! She was working away and seemed to have her life together. But behind it all, Mary was living a life of addiction. And she joins me now in studio. How are you doing, Mary?
I'm good, right? I'm good.
Good. Because that's a loaded question now when people ask you, isn't it? Because people are aware of what you've been through. So when they say, how are you?
Yeah, it's almost like people are worried about me.
Is that a nice thing?
I'm, like, the life I have today compared to where I was, I know my story is my story, but I'm not defined by my past. Like, I live a completely different life today. And when I say I'm good, I mean it today. Whereas before, I never would have meant it.
You were lying.
I was just saying, I'm grand, not a bother, like, leave me alone.
Yeah.
But today when I say I'm good, I don't say I'm great. I don't want to be too good. I don't want to be too low. I just like being in the middle.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Can I ask just a few personal questions first? Well, it's all personal with you today, but what age are you?
32.
32. Are you still tugging out for Kildare?
Yeah, I'm not on the panel at the minute, but I am. I'm there. I got some results yesterday from the doctors, which were good, and I'm waiting for a few more this week. So
okay.
I've just had an underlying heart condition, just kind of as a result of everything. And I'll know kind of in the next couple of days, but I'll be back in with the panel now soon enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
What height are you?
5'9", I think.
Right, 5'9". How many tattoos have you got?
Oh, I lost count. I have a lot.
when did you get your first tattoo?
I come home one day and I got kicked out of the house at home, and I said, right. So I ended up going to Belfast to move in with a friend.
Right.
And I was waiting for a bus in Dublin, in Bosaris, and the bus wasn't coming for a few hours. And I ended up going into Temple Bar, and I ended up just walking into a tattoo shop. And I just said, have you got any appointments? Your man says, yeah, sit down there and I'll give you a tattoo. So the first tattoo I got is it's a basketball player on my leg. And it's horrendous looking. I just don't even show
it. What age were you?
I was just gone 17.
Right.
And it's shocking looking, but it's my favourite one.
Okay, because basketball is important to you, and so there is a significance. It wasn't just a random
thing.
No,
that was my first love.
And sport has probably saved you. Right. So, you're Salins is where you're originally from.
Originally from Salins, yeah.
You're pure Kildare. You didn't move too far. You know, you're living in Lumville, Newbridge. Yeah.
Yeah, just on the curve there. I'm living there the last 5 years.
Yeah. You had a tough childhood.
Wasn't easy. As my sister says, the abnormal just became the normal. You just kind of, you get on with it. And that's the way it was. And we didn't see any different. We just grew up quick.
Yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it? Because we had a lovely lady on. We've spoken to her a couple of times. She survived the Holocaust. Edith Eger is her name, right? And she's a therapist now.
Wow.
And she says one of the most important questions you can ask people is, when did you stop being a child? That's an important question for you, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
When
I've
did
never
you?
Thought about that.
Yeah.
Oh, if you ask me that, I'm probably saying 6 or 7.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
There was something that happened that when you were 6 or 7.
Yeah, and that was it. You just grew up, yeah.
Yeah. And that's coloured your life.
And that's the way I live my whole life. I live my whole life in my past. And I didn't know that until last year.
Yeah.
You know, every day I'd wake up, it was just these constant thoughts of past trauma, past childhood, past everything. And I never realised that I never looked to a future or lived in the present. It was always just the same emotion, same thoughts, constantly replaying in my head. Like,
a lot of noise.
A lot of noise, yeah.
Yeah. So your dad left, your mother suffered her own addiction problems.
Yeah.
I must ask you later on, do you appreciate more, you know, what she was going through now that you've been through your own addiction? I'll ask you now, sure.
Yeah, I probably blamed her for a lot. Growing up, and I resented that woman, I really did, and I had a lot of anger in me growing up, hatred, and I mean it would be where I'd end up fighting or I'd end up in scraps or I was on the pitch and I'd be always getting red cards or people would always know me from just being tough and fighting, but I had that built up towards her, and it was probably when I came into recovery that I realised that she was completely powerless over what she was doing. Do you know what I mean? Drink and drugs had her. And it wasn't her fault. At the time, she did the best she can. And I got great freedom in that because I had such resentment for so long. But from my own understanding, learning to forget what happened, because some things are unforgivable, but learning forgiveness for myself has been something that has just completely freed my life. Like,
okay, so we go back to the basketball then. So did you spot, or did somebody spot, that you were a gifted sports person early on?
Yeah, so I always grew up playing football, and then I went to secondary school, and I just loved basketball. I just fell in love with it, like, and it was just this obsession to me. It was like, I loved football, but like when I discovered basketball, it was just a different level, like, and I was able to just, like, it was like my playground. I was able to just go and didn't have to think about anything else that was going on, and I was just totally present, and I was able to do tricks, and I loved it, like. And I used to go to camps down in Waterford every summer, Dungarvan Basketball Camp it was called, and I remember a coach spotted me there once and said, you'll be good enough if you keep practicing to go play in America. And to me it was just like, oh my God, like, this means I can get out of Ireland and Salins and get out of everything that's going on. And when I got that in my head, then it was just tunnel vision. It was like, right, this is your obsession now, and that's what I was doing.
Right, to get away from it all.
Yeah, yeah, 100%, yeah.
And that's been the story of your life, trying to get away, hasn't it, up until probably 6 months ago.
Yeah.
So you got that scholarship, you ended up in the States.
Yeah, so I was actually, then when I went to Belfast then, and I was waiting to hear about the scholarship then, and I was actually, I remember walking through Queen's University after a couple of months up there, and I got the phone call from the coach, and he said, you're after getting through the clearinghouse. There was a thing I couldn't get through academically because just with the different education systems. And then I remember getting a phone call and he said, I need you here in 3 days.
In America?
Yeah, so that was it, yeah.
Wow. How did you feel when you got that call?
I think I always had this thing my whole life that I was never able to feel proud of myself, or I never able to feel that, oh yeah, you're doing well. I was always very hard on myself, like. And even when I got that, I remember saying, right, look, that's the job done. Right, what's next?
Right.
It was kind of just, right, that you had to do that. Right, what's your next goal, or what's your next task? It wasn't a case of, oh, well done, you're after getting that now and settling at that. I was never able to settle. I always just wanted to achieve more. Once I got something, it was, right, what's next?
Did you ever feel confident in yourself, proud of yourself?
No, I struggled with self-esteem, yeah, like, my whole life, like. And I think it's something only I've realised probably in the last year. Like, I probably, people look at me and they probably say, oh, she's confident, there's not a bother on her. But like, you asked me to stand up in front of a room last year and talk about myself, I would have just crippled. Like, I could talk about football or the gym or sports all day, but like, when it came down to talking about me just being me and not any other character, it was just me, I wouldn't have been able to do it, like.
So over to America. When did you get your first injury? It was a pretty serious one, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was there my second year, and I was over there a couple of weeks early for pre-season, and I was jumping up for a ball and came down and cracked my ankle and my shin, and I ended up having to get a surgery straight away, and then I ended up having to get a reconstruction on my leg then.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's when you were introduced to...
That was when it all took off, yeah.
What's it called?
Oxycontin was the first drug that I got addicted to, yeah.
Tell us about that drug.
So, like, I drank first when I was 12, and I said I was never doing it again. And I'd seen the devastation alcoholism had caused to a family, like, and I was just so anti-drinking. I was like, I'm not doing it, like, not a hope. Then when I got this inside me, it was like this feeling of just, I finally belong somewhere, if that makes sense. It was just like, it was like something I'd been searching for my whole life, like this feeling of, I don't know whether you call it love or a belonging or whatever it is. But I remember getting that, and I remember that. I can still feel it to this day.
It's an opioid. It's in the same family as heroin.
Yeah. And I remember thinking, oh my God, this isn't just taking away the pain in my body at the minute. It's taking away all the pain that's been going on in my head for the last 10 years. Like, I just used to have a screaming head that...
Did it silence it, or what did it do?
It just wasn't there.
It wasn't there.
No,
just
it was a different world altogether.
Right.
It was just happiness and love and fluffy bunnies and rainbows and everything. And I just not to have that pain, I just was like, oh my God, this is a different world altogether.
Right.
And
you immediately made the connection between the drug and this sensation.
After a couple of days, I'd say less than a week, I knew that I was in a bit of trouble. Not that I was in trouble, but I knew that I liked it a lot. And it wasn't just for pain in my leg.
And were you 19 or?
Yeah, I was just 19, yeah. And I was on that for nearly 18 months. Like, it was a mix of oxycodone and oxycontin. Like, it was a long time, and coming off that, I didn't want to come off it. I didn't want to come back and play basketball. I was just thinking, no, I just want more of this, like.
Yeah.
And then, I was over there, and I'm in America, I'm in college, I'm not able to play, I'm over there on my own, and sure, all I was going to do was just have the fun, like, have crack, you know.
And did you start drinking then?
Started drinking then, yeah. And then that took off there, and I was the Irish kid in America, so I probably lapped that up a bit.
And can you hold your drink?
Like, I think when I was over there, I used to take pride in the fact that I was able to drink way more than any of them.
Yeah.
You know, because like, the Irish can't drink at all.
But people forget that that's sort of important if you're going to become an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to have two drinks and you fall over, you'll probably never become an alcoholic.
Yeah.
You need to have a bit of staying power, a bit of stamina.
Yeah, and I think from the sport as well, I was always like fit and strong, and I was probably, I don't know, I was always able to hold like a lot.
Right.
Mm. But I took pride in that. Like, I'd like be like, I'd always want the most or be able to take the most, or yeah, it was like almost like a competition thing again.
And was that thing that happened to you when you were 12, and like, you know, and my dad was a heavy drinker as well, so I know what you're talking about, where I'm never going to be that person, you know, I'm not going to be a heavy drinker.
Yeah.
And that was you with your mother. I'm not going to repeat the mistakes that, you know, one of my parents made.
And when you
started repeating the mistakes, how were you feeling?
I, looking back now, and when I'm able to kind of analyse it now, I can see how powerless I was over it, like, and I didn't realise that. And I was in denial until, maybe 3 years in recovery, I was in denial until I realised, oh, no, you actually do have a problem.
Yeah.
I was always just like, oh, no, you're all right, like, you don't have a problem, you're not like her. And even, I remember meeting her one day then, and she actually said it to me, and she was like, you need to go get help, you have a problem. I seen her after years. And I was like, who do you think you are, like, telling me that? Like, but I, looking back now, like, she was 100% right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was, like...
So as I was saying earlier on, you were in and out. So you came back and you sort of started playing football again.
Yeah, I came back and I came back one summer, and my little sister was at home with my mother, and I said, look, I'm not going back. I kind of wanted to stay with my little sister, and she's my world, and I didn't have her for so long, and she came back into my life at Christmas there, and I just looked like, my brother and sister are my heroes, like, too, because like, they grew up with a lot of traumas and stuff I did, but like, my brother is married with two beautiful kids, and my sister is off travelling the world with her boyfriend, and like, I just think what they came through, like, as well, they're unreal. But I stayed at home, and then I came back into the Kildare panel, and I said, look, maybe if I get back into playing a bit of football, it'll straighten me out, because I was living from home to home, kind of in one place for a couple of months. I was gone again, partying. It was Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we were out drinking. That was the thing you did.
You were in your 20s.
Yeah, I was in my 20s, just living like a 20-year-old was, like. But the thing was, on the Sunday morning, when everyone was out back in from the Saturday night, I had to go on the Sunday morning again.
Drink again.
I had to go. And then
would it be back down to the pub, or would you have
it was usually like an early house, and then on the Monday it was the same again,
right?
And I knew, like, I didn't have to be with anyone to drink. I'd walk into a pub on my own and sit up at the bar and talk football to the old lads, not a bother, and have a pint in front of me, and to me that was happiness.
And was the drink letting you get out of your head as well, get out of, you know, get away from the noise? And
yeah, well, it was for a certain amount of time, but it stopped working after a while. Yeah.
And then,
then it turned to other things.
Yeah. So what, do you have to go for, you know, stronger medication then, stronger drugs to
it was
take
different,
out of yourself?
Different mixes of things, different drugs, trying different things, trying to add this with this, trying to take this a different way. It was always something to try, you know, maybe this'll, do you know what I mean? It was never something, you take something and it'd work once and then it wouldn't work again, and it was like, right, I need to think of something else.
Right.
It was always just chasing.
Are you playing football through all this?
I was playing football, yeah.
Right.
I was playing football, and then I left the panel for about 2 years, and then I came back into the panel in 2016 thinking, no, I was gone bad then. I was coming back into the panel and I said, oh, this will definitely get me on the straight and narrow. And just 2016, it probably got worse then. I just isolated completely and I just had to hide it more. And 2016, like, when I think about it, is looking on paper, it's the probably most successful year of my life, but my God, I was in ribbons, like.
So you're playing in goals for your county.
Yeah.
They get to an All-Ireland intermediary final. Intermediary, is that what they call it?
Playing Croke Park, yeah.
Yeah, playing Croke Park. So you were in Croke Park. Now, talk to me about what was going on in your life. Like, what happened the night before? What had you done that week, for example?
Yeah, like that year, like, I was living in my car for about 3 weeks that year. And then I got a house. And I was living in a house which just was me and the dog and a mattress, and the house was just, there was no electricity, no windows, the place was wrecked, like. And I go up training in the evenings, and I come back then and just, I drink then for the rest of the day or the rest of the night, and it was the same Groundhog Day all every week, like. And like, in the night before the All-Ireland, even, I remember saying to myself, like, geez, I have to go easy today. Like, it's mad when you think about it. Like, my preparation for that final was, I won't drink any spirits or I won't take anything tonight. All I'm going to do is have 8 cans. So this is on a Saturday, and I said to myself, right, that'll be easy. You'll fall, and it'll be enough to get out of my head, but it won't be enough that I'll be dying the next day. So
are you talking 500ml cans?
Yeah, so that was the
tall
ones. That was the Saturday, That was the Saturday before the All-Ireland. And then I woke up actually that night at 1 o'clock. And I remember reading a book actually by a goalkeeper from Cavan called Alan O'Mara. And I remember reading it, and I read it front to back right through till 7 o'clock that morning. And he talks in the book about depression and the people have talking about like the psychology of your mind and stuff like this. And I remember thinking, that's all that's wrong with me. I have a bit of depression, sure. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with me. Wait till this is all over. I'm going to get this sorted. Like, that's what I was thinking. And I just didn't know what was wrong with me. And then I went and played the match. And I remember just standing in Croke Park like...
Were you hungover? Like 8 cans would have me out. Maybe.
No, I remember coming through in Croke Park a bit. And I just remember... And I remember just standing there looking up and I just said like... What am I doing here? Like, I was like, you are just the biggest fraud ever. This is what I was thinking. I remember walking around even at the start to the band and stuff and just, I just, I had no interest. Like, I was just so, all I could think about was, today, no matter what, if we win or lose, this is over. And we can have the crack later on tonight.
When you say this is over, the match will be over.
The season was over.
Oh, the season was over. Yeah. You can relax.
Yeah, because I could relax then. I didn't have to kind of go around pretending, oh, Jesus, right, you're this person or that.
And can you remember any details from the game? Like, you must have saved. Did you save anything? Can you remember?
I know I saved the penalty because people told me, and there's video clips of it. I haven't. I remember very little from that match.
Well, you must have played well to be an all-star after it.
Yeah, I remember very little from that match. Jeez. The next memory I have is...
Do you regret that?
No, I don't live a life of regrets.
Right.
I don't, because I wouldn't be where I am today if I had changed that in my past or anything that I've gone through.
So it makes you who you are?
Everything that I've gone through in life makes me who I am, yeah. But like, I know next time I'll be a lot more present and I'll value it a hell of a lot more.
Yeah.
Do you know?
So did it go from bad to worse then into 2017?
Yeah, sure, then it was just I didn't have to pay for a pint in the county for months.
Oh, you're of course, yeah.
Sure, then I just...
Isn't Ireland great?
It's town great, there, yeah.
There you are, Mary. What are you having? What are you having?
But sure, that was... I was always looking for an excuse to drink or an excuse to do this. So, like, that was an excuse for so long and there was only a certain amount of mileage I got out of that, you know. And then went back playing in 2017 again and just had no interest. And then at the end of 2017, I was just at a rock bottom, like, and my head was just in a place where I just didn't want to be here anymore, like, just gone. Totally emotionless, just had no value for myself, had no value in life, didn't see a purpose to be here, and I was empty, like. And but I thought about that a long time, like 2016, these were reoccurring thoughts. I was just like, no, I don't want to be here today. I don't want to be here anymore. Like, there was no solution to figure out what was going on in my head. I didn't know what was wrong with me. And
you talked about, I've listened to a couple of interviews, you talked about the noise in your head. And was there pictures as well? Pictures in your head?
Or? Probably just be memories.
Yeah.
Probably a lot of it real, but also then a lot of things that weren't real that you created yourself.
Yeah, like the fraud thing.
Yeah, just,
I'm worthless. When you weren't, you were a very good footballer, a very good basketball player.
Yeah,
you know?
I just always used to think, like, I'd be getting all these awards, I'd be thinking, I don't deserve this. Like, what is going on?
Yeah.
I was like, they're going to catch me out, like. But I had to try and mask constantly and try and hide it so much. Nearly that I was brilliant at it. I tried more, like. But it was just that constant noise was always in my head. Even when I came into recovery, it was there for a long time until I learned to deal with everything. And I learned to talk. I never talked about anything in my life. Ever. And when I started
to anybody?
Talking, no, nobody.
Nobody?
Nobody, no.
So people who were close to you, they wouldn't have known what you'd been through as a child, that you became an adult at the age of 6 or you lost your childhood at the age of 6. They didn't know that.
Well, a lot of people close would know the situation.
Yes.
But they wouldn't, only my brother and sister probably know the real extent of it. Like. Yeah. And today we laugh about it and we have the crack, and me and my brother will say, remember we used to have to go in and do the shopping when we were 8 and 9 and we used to get the bus into Super Queen and Ace and get the bus back, and we'd be laughing and joking about this now.
Yeah.
But when you look back at it now, when I think about it, that's my nephew's doing that, and I'm like, how wrong that was.
And when you cooking your own meals and all that?
We would, yeah. We do, we laugh about it
and
now.
Were you the eldest?
No, I'm the middle, so I have an older brother and a younger sister.
Right.
Yeah.
So you all shared all those tasks that a parent should have been doing.
Yeah, me and my brother did, and my little sister was kind of the baby. She reminded her she was the baby.
Yeah.
But there's only a year kind of between us all, like.
Why do you think you came out of it a lot worse than your brother and sister?
I don't know. That's why I think I just look up to them so much. I say, how, like, do you have the life you're on, really? Like,
yeah.
I really, like, they are my heroes, two of them. And they're such good people, like, and we're so close now. Whereas we weren't. We were separated a lot as well as kids, and we weren't always close.
When you say separated, what do you mean?
We, like, me and my sister were actually sent somewhere, and my brother was sent somewhere else when we were younger. Like, we weren't always together.
Right. Was that fostering?
My mother was in, right. She was sent away as well, like, and... So we were all separated, but now, like, I don't think we'd be as close as we were today if we didn't kind of go through what we've been through.
So 2017, you're suicidal. Your dog Bailey, who was a golden retriever, and an old man on the Curra saved your life.
Yeah, well, that's the way I look at it. Like, I woke up that day and I said the only thing that every day I'd stop me from doing anything was. That I had this dog that when I got him, I was just like, oh my God, I love this little thing.
Yeah.
And I never felt love for anything in my life. Like, I genuinely didn't. I couldn't feel emotion to anything. And I remember seeing this puppy, like, I remember just looking at him going, oh my God, like.
They're the cutest little
how, thing. And I was responsible for him. And I was like, how does someone have to give me the responsibility for this thing? Like, and I loved him. I felt this feeling in my chest that I'd never, ever felt before. And it was love, like. And I used to think, no, I can't do it. Like, who's going to mind him? Yeah. And he was so precious to me, like, and he's beautiful. You know, golden retrievers, they're just adorable, like, and this lad is such a character. And I woke up that day and I just said, no, I had a plan, I knew what I was doing, and I said, I'll walk him once more on the Curra, and I headed out, and I just met a man, and I usually walk with the head down, the earphones would be in, just completely stay away from everyone. If anyone, like, spoke to you, you'd nearly just walk, so that you just ignore them. And I remember just meeting this man, and he stopped me, and he just said, how beautiful Bailey was, and he was a gorgeous dog, and was rubbing him, and I'd never met him before, and it was only spoke to him for maybe about 5 minutes, like, and it was just that tiny little social interaction with that man just changed. I had so much darkness in me that day, and it was a little bit of light that I was like, ah, do you know what, like, life isn't that bad today, maybe I won't do it, like, and I went home and started drinking again and fell asleep then over it, and I woke up the next day, and I don't know why. Because I'd never thought about maybe you have a problem with drink. I never thought about there's a solution to this that isn't that you're going to take your own life. I just thought there was only one way out of it. And I just woke up that day and I said, geez, I wonder if I stop drinking, will that noise in my head go down? And I made a phone call and I rang a man. And I'll never forget the feeling inside me to make that phone call, because I never asked for help in my life with anything. Like. And for me to actually put up and say, I need a bit of help here, it was like this pride thing. I just couldn't do it. Like, and I still find that very hard today. But I'm trying to force myself to do it. But I remember making a phone call and he just spoke to me for 2 hours, and he was the most kindest, gentlest man. And he was just, I couldn't get over how gentle and kind he was. And he just said, I'll collect you there later on. And he came over and he gave me his time and he drove me around for a while. And that was the start of my recovery then.
And had he been through addiction himself?
Yeah, I'd heard that, like, he'd stopped drinking.
Right.
And all I rang him and asked him was, I said, just, I need you to tell me how to do that, because I'd realised then I couldn't stop on my own. I was too deep. I couldn't stop at all on my own, and I needed a bit of help.
And you tried, but you weren't successful, and you hid an addiction to tablets.
Yeah.
And that's very clever, isn't it? It's invisible. You know, you can drop all the codeine or whatever neurofin you like, and nobody will really know. There won't be a smell off your breath, or you won't fall over.
No.
So,
like, I came into recovery, and like, when you're like, in a way, drinking drugs kept me alive for so long, and I really believe that, because when I first came into recovery and stopped taking everything, and I was on tablets to come down off everything, and like, I remember my head just, it went 10 times worse, and I couldn't cope at all. And I relapsed straight away, because all this emotion, all these feelings, all these things that are coming up, and I wasn't able to drown them out straight away. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, no way. So I relapsed straight away, and people knew that. And then it was a case of, right, I need to start hiding this a bit better, because I was successful in everything I did. When I think about it, like, sporting-wise, I was always trying to be better or trying to achieve, or I was always driven. And I just couldn't conquer this thing at all. I was like, how does this just have one over on me? But the more I tried to beat it, I was actually going the opposite way. And what I really needed to do was just to surrender, like, and just give into it. So I relapsed for 3 years. And I had tried to get into treatment. I couldn't at the time because of certain circumstances. And I came last year then, and it was just tablets and tablets, and at the end of middle of last year, it was just like, oh my God, like, I'm back in the worst place I was in 2017 walking that dog in the car.
Okay. And how long are you clean and sober now?
I'll be 7 months on Sunday.
Right.
And I count every day.
Stay with us, because there's text there. I just have to take a quick commercial break to get out of the way before 4 o'clock, and we'll talk to Mary a little bit more after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Mary Hulgrain is here. So 7 months, Mary, and you count every day.
I do. And I think all we have is today, like, as well. You know, I just try to live in today, and that's what I do. I don't try to look too far forward, and I definitely don't try to reflect on the past or look behind. I just try to see what I can do today, like.
Yeah. You have a gym in Newbridge.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know that you're waiting for results on your heart condition. And how were they? How were the results?
Yeah, the results were good. I'm waiting on a few more today and tomorrow, and then I should fully know. But their first bit of good results I've gotten, because it kind of just kicked in January, I thought it was just a bit of anxiety I was getting, but no, it ended up being something a bit more.
So it's a fast heart rate, is it?
Yeah, it's just...
Unbreakable, you've written the tattoo across.
Yeah.
What's the... I can never remember the name for that. Decollage or something like that. Your decollage is... when did you get that done?
I don't remember getting it done.
Right.
I was in the pub on a Sunday one day, I headed off and I got it. I remember waking up the next day and I was looking in the mirror and I was like, what does that even say? But sure look.
Unbreakable.
It's unbreakable, sure look.
Well, I think it has significance now, doesn't it?
It does. Like, all my tattoos have stories. I like them, like.
Yeah. Brilliant lady, beautiful Clare accent, fabulous. I'm sober 28 years and I'm 66.
Oh,
you
wow.
See? Yeah. That beautiful lady has her whole life ahead of her, sending her hugs and kisses. I get very emotional when I look at this, because it's 7 months, but at some stage that person who was sober for 28 years had a 7 months anniversary,
well,
you know.
That's something else.
That young woman, Mary, is a pleasure to listen to her. She's so down to earth and honest. It's unbelievable. I wish her well for the future. Powerful woman. And congrats to that young lady on her new life. What a wonderful journey ahead. I'm 33 years sober today.
Oh, wow.
With the help of AA, Higher Power, and my great friends.
Happy
AA.
Birthday.
That's Pat. And... that lady could help so many people. Absolutely amazing that she can talk about her experiences like that. Well done. And well done to that young lady. Wish her love and luck, says Mary Andrada. And I'm on a bus crying listening to that, girl. See, I'm starting to cry. See, I'm okay when I'm talking to you. And then when I get these texts, you should be crying at me. Been battling addiction myself for years. Got sober in 2012 and relapsed last year. Her story is inspiring and I needed to hear it. And she tells it so well. So thank you, says Pat. And thanks for talking to Mary. Along with AA, there is LifeRing Secular Recovery, lifering.ie. Can you give it a mention, please? I wouldn't have survived without both of these organisations, says S. And there's more lovely things coming in about you. Look, all I can do is wish you well. I'd love to give you a hug, but we're not allowed to do that. And mind yourself.
Thanks a million.
Mind yourself. And it's been a real pleasure chatting to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Mary. Anish Toshin, now in the Free Skelton and Nogue to Le Kieran of Harda.